This is Patty Daniels. I'm the executive producer of Vermont Edition, and you're listening to today's podcast. This episode has been edited for clarity and brevity. Enjoy.
Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Senator Bernie Sanders wants to move the Democratic Party in a new direction, a direction that addresses many of the issues that Sanders raised in his presidential campaign, including income inequality, the right of all people to have health care, and free college tuition for many families. Is this a successful message for the Democratic Party? Some moderate Democrats aren't so sure. This is one of the topics we'll discuss today with our guest, Senator Bernie Sanders. Senator, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Good to be with you, Bob.
It's been a while since you've been on the program. I hope we can make this a more regular occurrence going forward. Let's start off talking about the testimony yesterday of former FBI Director James Comey. What do you think were the most important parts of Comey's testimony?
Well, I think the most important part is where he basically said that he believed the President of the United States is a liar. And that after his meetings with the president, he felt compelled to write up a memo immediately, share it with some of his colleagues, because he thought the president might lie about the meetings that he held. This issue, Bob, is obviously everybody knows, is part of the whole broader discussion of whether or not the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians in the 2016 elections in favor of Trump. And I think what everybody knows is the Russians played an active role. Question is, did they collude? Right now, what we have is former FBI Director Mueller, who is now special counsel, special prosecutor, looking at this issue, something that I wanted. Mueller is somebody who is widely supported. We have the Senate Intelligence Committee looking at it, the House Intelligence Committee looking at it. Hopefully it'll be done in a bipartisan way. But this is an enormous issue. If, and I use the word if, Trump's campaign colluded with the Russians, this is a very, very serious crime. It's important that we understand that. We also need to understand whether there has been any obstruction, whether there has been an obstruction of justice. Why was Comey fired? Was he fired because, in fact, he was mounting a vigorous investigation? We need to know that as well. So this is a big deal.
Well, based on all the information that you've seen, including classified documents, do you believe that there was collusion?
I can't say that right now. I would not say that right now. I think what you need is a very objective, factual investigation. I think anyone jumping to conclusions before all the facts were out, before the special prosecutor completed his investigation, would be doing a real disservice. This is obviously a very politically charged issue. The American people have got to know that this is not done for political reasons. Needless to say, I am not a great fan of Donald Trump, but that has nothing to do with my views on this issue. So the facts have got to lead us to where they are. Mueller is now in the beginning of that investigation. We have two committees that are looking on it, and let's see where it goes.
Senator, you've spent a lot of time trying to bring some changes to the Democratic Party, including economic justice, single-payer health care, free college tuition. You know, at the same time, you've got a number of Democrats who are very concerned that you're pulling the party too far to the left.
Well, I understand that, Bob, and that's true. But I think the momentum clearly is with us all over the country. And I'll tell you why. And it's not just the 2016 presidential election that Trump, who was the least popular candidate ever in the history of the United States, managed to win. But it's beyond that. I think all over this country, people are asking themselves, how does it happen that when the Democrats are confronted with a right-wing extremist party, a party that wants to cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, give huge tax breaks to billionaires, doesn't even believe in the reality of climate change, wants to take away women's rights to Jews, etc., etc. In other words, a party that has an extremely unpopular agenda, issue by issue. How does it happen that the Republican Party has won not only the White House, but the U.S. Senate, the U.S. House? They now control almost two-thirds of the governor's chairs in this country. In the last 9 years, Democrats have lost close to 1,000 legislative seats in legislatures all over this country. Anyone who looks at how the Democratic Party has performed. Any objective assessment, you know, says this is not working. It's like a football coach, you know, who goes 0 for 11. It ain't working. And why is it not working? I think it's not working, in my view, is because the Democratic Party nationally and in many states has not been clear about which side it is on. In my view, the most significant issue facing this country today, in many ways the entire industrialized world, is a rapid movement toward oligarchy, where a small number of billionaire families control not only the economics, but the politics of nation after nation after nation. So in the United States, what people are asking themselves, how does it happen that I was just in the UK a few days ago, I was in Ireland, you know, I was in Germany. All of these countries, our neighbors in Canada, managed to have health care, Bob, as a right for all of their people. It's not a big deal. You go up to Canada, it's not a big deal. Everybody has health care. And they end up spending about half of what we do per capita. Their cost of prescription drugs in Canada, substantially less than the United States. You go to countries around the world, go to Germany. They manage to have their public colleges and universities tuition free. You go to other countries around the world that do a lot better job in protecting their workers, protecting their seniors, doing a stronger job and environment. People in this country are saying, why can't we do that? Where is the Democratic Party? And the answer is, for too many years, Democrats have been too dependent on corporate interests, on Wall Street, on big money. It is time to transform that party to make it a grassroots party of working people, of young people, people who want to demand and fight for a government that represents all of us and not just the 1%.
Let me ask you about a recent article in Politico that analyzed your efforts to transform the Democratic Party. It said, quote, by many measures, the Bernie Sanders revolution proved a smashing success. Young people registered to vote and small donors opened their wallets. But nearly a year after Sanders' presidential run fell short, one thing is missing in the afterglow, a reliable string of victories at the ballot box. And they cite several races where candidates that you strongly supported ended up losing, that being the contest for mayor of Omaha, the contest for chairperson of the Democratic Party in California, and the special U.S. House election in Montana. So how do you respond to their analysis that indicate that your message is actually not being that well received across the country?
I did read that article, and there's half. When you take on the establishment, Bob, no one ever suggested that change is going to come overnight. On the other hand, what they neglected to point out is that we have won some very, very significant races in Congress. In just a couple of weeks ago, in New York State, a candidate in a district that Trump had done very, very well in won a landslide victory for New York State Assembly, and we supported her. We won a wonderful victory outside of Atlanta, Georgia, where a young African-American guy, very progressive, won a strong, strong victory with our support. We won a victory in Jackson, Mississippi. All over the country, you're having young people running for school board, running for city council, and winning. It's one of the gratifying things. I was up in Portland, Maine, not so long ago. This young man came up to me and said, you know, Bernie, because of you, I ran on now on the city council in Portland, Maine. So I think, you know, I'm not going to tell you that everything that everybody that we have supported has won. That would not be true. But we are making progress. I think there are now five state chairpersons of Democratic parties around the country who are progressives. So bottom line is transforming a major political party, taking on the establishment is not easy. We are involving a lot of people in the political process. Yeah, we lost in California, but that is the largest state in this country, and thousands of people became involved. So the answer is change does not come easily. I think we are making progress. We're winning some. We're certainly losing some, and we just have to keep going.
Let's turn to our callers and talk to Tom in Manchester. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I'm an independent, and I've been seeing this coming for years. I'm wondering, I'm glad the first thing you did, Senator, was after Hillary won the nomination, is declaring yourself an independent again, because I think progressive people need to finally stand up to the corporate powers. And I'm wondering if there could be a communication that take a page out of the old Newt Gingrich book and talk about family values and maybe call it a progressive promise instead of a contract with America. Because if we have health care and we have educational opportunities, we'll have lower welfare, we'll have lower food stamps, we'll have lower crime.
Well, Tom, I'm sorry, is the caller's name Tom?
Yes.
Yeah, Tom, I think you're absolutely right. Look, these are not some kind of abstract intellectual debates that we're having. These are moral issues, you know, and if you read some of the stuff that Pope Francis writes, this is exactly what he talks about. We have to ask ourselves about the morality of an economy in which the top one-tenth of 1% now owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%, where in Vermont and around this country, you've got people working two or three jobs, and you have 52% of all new income goes to the top 1%. And they got to look at what the Trump people are trying to do. This is a budget. I mean, it's literally unbelievable. When I talk about it, people go, oh, Bernie's, he's not telling the truth. It can't be that bad. It is that bad. This is a budget that makes, over a 10-year period, $2.5 trillion in cuts to programs like LIHEAP, which keeps senior citizens warm in the wintertime, after-school programs, cuts massively on Medicaid, so the low-income people will lose their health insurance. People will not be able to take care of their, provide for their parents in nursing homes. He has a health care proposal that throws 23 million people off of health insurance. And at the end of all of this stuff, massive attacks on the needs of children, the elderly, the children, the sick and the poor. What is beyond belief is Trump's budget then provides $3 trillion in tax breaks to the top 1%. The wealthiest family in America today is the Walton family that owns Walmart. It's a family worth approximately $130 billion, a lot of money. If the Trump budget were to go through, the Walton family alone, one family, would get up to a $52 billion tax break at the same time as we see massive cuts in health care and education and environmental protection that impact working families and lower-income people. This is insane. So when Tom talks about a question of morality, he is right. And the other thing is that we know we have more people in jail than any other country on earth, 2.2 million people in jail. And what we know is, everybody knows this, that if you invest in jobs for young people, very areas all over this country, very high unemployment rate for young people in inner cities, in rural areas, kids can't find jobs. Invest in jobs, invest in education, keep kids from dropping out. You know what? Kids are not going to end up in jail. We end up saving money. So investing in early childhood education, investing in the needs of working people, investing in seniors, perfect example, Meals on Wheels program provides a warm meal every day to lower-income senior citizens. Take that away, you're going to end up finding seniors more likely to end up in the hospital at great expense. They don't get the nutrition they need. They're not being seen by somebody every single day. So Tom is right. Investing in these programs is not only the moral and right thing to do, it ends up saving taxpayers' money.
Senator Sanders, you think it's somewhat ironic that a lifelong independent like yourself, and you'd still describe yourself as an independent, has taken on the role of trying to transform the Democratic Party?
Yes. But here's the story. I think the American people today are so politically demoralized. So many of our people don't vote, don't pay attention to what's going on, basically throwing their hands up in the air and saying, you know, I just can't deal with this. You know, I have no power. Doesn't matter what I believe. Doesn't matter what my needs are. Does anybody care about me? I think that what's happened over the last number of years, Bob, is that more and more people, when you know, a pollster will say, well, what are you, a Democrat, Republican, you're an independent, what are you? More and more people, I think in Vermont and around the country, are saying, I'm an independent. I'm not happy with the Democratic Party. I'm not happy with the Republican Party. And I think if, in fact, the Democratic Party is going to make changes, you just heard Tom call up a moment ago and he said he's an independent. If the Democratic Party is going to make progress, it is going to have to bring millions and millions of those independents who today are not enamored with the Democratic Party for a lot of good reasons into them. So I have no problem I think the Democratic Party is going to have to do that. So I think being an independent is actually kind of positive in that effort.
Let's talk to June, who's calling from Jericho. Hi, June. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I am wondering, Bernie, so many of us support you, and I'm also an independent, but I was once upon a time a Democrat. And I have moved away from the party because I feel the party just doesn't get it. And recently, I've been surprised at how much they don't get it, because the voters were very clear in the last election, leading up to the election, of what we wanted, what we needed, and the excuses that have come out as to what happened in the election don't match what the voters were saying. I know you know that. I'm wondering, what do we do if the Democratic Party doesn't get it?
June, I mean, that is the question that a lot of people are asking. This is how I'd respond to that. These are very, very tough moments in American history. And we have, in my view, probably the worst president in the history of our country now in office. And I worry very much about what he does every day. What I am trying to do is to, as Bob and I just discussed, make fundamental changes in the Democratic Party. Make it clear that you cannot be a party of Wall Street, of the pharmaceutical industry, of the fossil fuel industry, of big money interests, at the same time as you're a party of the middle class and working families. That's what I am trying to do. And I want to say this, June, in all fairness to what's going on in Congress right now. If you paid attention, as I'm sure you did, to some of the things that I talked about during the campaign, about the need to raise the minimum wage to a living wage, $15 an hour. Well, guess what? That is now the policy, essentially, of the Democratic Party. I've introduced that legislation. It now has 30 co-sponsors in the Senate, and I believe about 150 in the House. You may have heard me talk about the need to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. In Vermont, it's water systems, roads, bridges, wastewater plants. Okay? I campaigned on a $1 trillion program. That is now the program of the Democratic Party. You heard me talking about making public colleges and universities tuition-free, because it's absurd that so many of our young people are leaving school $50,000, $100,000 in debt. Others can't get into college because their families lack money. Well, guess what? That is now the position of the, I would say, a good majority of the Democrats. Transforming our energy system, taking on fossil fuel. So in other words, what I would say, June, on many issues, not all, I don't want to suggest all, we are making some progress in making the kinds of changes that need. We still have a long, long way to go, but I think we are making some progress.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today is Senator Bernie Sanders. Let's talk to Erica in St. Johnsbury. Hi, Erica. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. Senator Sanders, I, too, share your dismay since the election at the Democratic Party's failure to kind of take the lessons of the election and see that there are so many people disgruntled and angry with financial vulnerability. When I think about things, it seems to me that maybe campaign finance reform is the place to go to do the most to fix a lot. And it seems to me that it's something that could attract people on the right that have felt themselves losing as well. When I talk to Republicans and even Trump supporters, I hear them talk about term limits. And it seems to me that term limits, well, yeah, maybe, but campaign finance reforms to make, you know, votes, not money, drive the system as was intended would be an even more comprehensive solution. So I wanted to ask you kind of where you stand on campaign finance reform as sort of a priority in your vision of a platform.
Erica, thank you very much. That is a great question. And I think everything you said is absolutely right. Let me just take a second, Bob, to pick up on Erica's point, because I think many people do not know the extent of the corrupt campaign finance system that we have right now. You know, we think back on the, when you walk into my office in Burlington, there is a picture of Norman Rockwell's painting. Remember that painting where there's a town meeting and a guy from Vermont is raising his hand? Remember that picture?
Yes.
It's a beautiful picture. I love that picture. And what it talks about is in Vermont, you know, historically for hundreds of years, we've had town meetings. People have come out, and they argue about how much you spend on the roads and how much you spend on this and how much you spend on that, and they have a vote. And it's one person, one vote. That's called democracy. I think that many people in this country do not fully understand where we are, Erica's point, on campaign finance. Where we are today is a result of this disastrous and horrific Supreme Court decision, 5-4 decision, I think it was 6-7 years ago, on the Citizens United case. What billionaires and corporations can now do is spend unlimited amounts of money on campaigns, and that is exactly what they are doing. The Koch brothers are the second wealthiest family in America. I think they're worth about $80, $90 billion. They have spent in their lifetimes many, many, many hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, over the years to elect candidates who represent the wealthy and the powerful. And if you look at Trump's agenda today, if you look at his budget, if you look at his tax policy, this is what the Koch brothers have paid for over the years. Massive tax breaks for the wealthiest people, including the Koch brothers, by the way. They would get something like $30 billion if their family were $30 billion in tax breaks, and massive cutbacks on programs for working families. So Erica's point is that, can we bring people together, regardless if you're a conservative? Are you comfortable that in the state of Vermont you can have some billionaire family coming in, whether it's most of the money is Republican, some of it is Democratic, but have some billionaire family flooding the airwaves in the state of Vermont with ugly 30-second ads? They may not know anything about the state. They may not even know the candidate. And they're going to lie and put this ugly 30-second stuff on. This is what's going on around the country today. And the Republicans, by the way, want to make it worse. They think Citizens United did not go far enough because Citizens United requires independent expenditures. What Republicans want to do is allow billionaires to give money directly into the candidate himself or herself. You mentioned a moment ago one of our efforts that did not succeed was with a guy named Rob Quist running for Congress in Montana. Rob did a very good job of raising small donations, raised about $5, $6 million for his campaign in Montana. Pretty good. Turns out, though, in terms of independent expenditures, the big money billionaires put $6 million into that Montana race. His side brought in $600,000. They were outspent 10-1. And that is what's going to go on, is going on, and what will increasingly go on around the rest of the country. Republicans will give massive tax breaks to billionaires. They'll cut programs to working people. And months before the election, they will bombard the airwaves with ugly 30-second ads, character assassination lies, et cetera, et cetera. That is the state of American democracy today. And that is why, and I think Erica's point is well taken, a lot of conservatives don't like this as well. This is why we need to overturn Citizens United and, in my view, move to public funding of elections. And I think that is very, very important if we're concerned about any other issue out there. You need to gain control over this outrageous campaign finance system that we have today.
Let's talk to Jake, who's calling from Warren. Hey, Jake, what's on your mind today?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. And I was wondering, Bernie, if you are planning on running for the presidency again, and if so, are you willing to maybe take a shot at running as an independent, given the amount of support that you had? Because obviously, I think had you not been running in the Democratic Party, you probably would have won. So I'm wondering what your viewpoint is on that.
Well, Jake, I think Bob knows the answer that I'm going to give you. It's what I give all the time, and that is it's a little bit early to be talking about an election, you know, 3.5 years from now. And as I think you've heard, I'm spending a lot of time and energy trying to oppose this disastrous Trump health care plan and budget and environmental programs that he is bringing forth. It's a little bit early. So in my view, that's where my focus is. And that's where I think as a people we should be focused. Right now, I'll tell you this. The last month in the House by a 3-vote majority, Republicans passed an unbelievably bad health care bill. It's the worst, one of the worst pieces of legislation ever passed in Congress. It throws 23 million people off of health insurance, cuts Medicaid by $800 billion. It defunds Planned Parenthood, telling 2.5 million women in Vermont and around the country that they can't get the health care they want, raises premiums for older workers, unbelievably bad plan, and then gives hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks for the top 2%. You know, that is where I am focused on right now, because the Republicans in the Senate are working on a bill that will not be dissimilar. And so, you know, my interest right now is stopping the Trump agenda, is fighting for progressive alternatives, and what we will see, you know, what happens in 3.5 years from now. But it's a little bit early for me to get into that.
Senator, let's talk about what happens 1.5 years from now. You're up for re-election in 2018. You're already fundraising. You've put out fundraising letters seeking money for your re-election bid. I think you
Well, that's not quite accurate, Bob. What I did do was seek money for a national effort that I undertook to go around the country to support progressive candidates and to, but the answer to the question is, you know, Bob, and you have heard me say this as well. Obviously, you know, I am up for re-election. There was a time, you know, it's funny. Last night, the UK had their election. And I thought this guy, Jeremy Corbyn, did quite well, given where he started from. Do you know how long that election was?
I think it was about six weeks, two months.
You know, in America, it just seems that elections never, ever end. The day after the election, the media is, you know, speculating who's going to run and all that stuff. I don't think that that's what the American people want. They don't want never-ending elections. They would like their elected officials to start focusing on the issues that are of concern to me. So, you know, I can tell you that, you know, a number of years ago, you know, we had elections that were 6 months, which is a pretty long time. We don't need year-and-a-half elections. So, trust me, I will make that decision at the appropriate time. The people of Vermont will learn about it. But let me just say that I am very, very proud of representing Vermont in the U.S. Senate, and I very much appreciate the support that I've gotten over the years.
Senator, you have roughly $4 million in your reelection account. Are you telling us that you're not sure if you're going to seek reelection?
I'm telling you that I've not made it. You know, Bob, this is, again, what I think people are not. What difference does it make? I will make that decision at the appropriate time, and it's true. We have a good deal of money in my campaign reelection effort if I choose to do that. All that I'm saying is that we should not have never-ending elections, and maybe we should be focusing on the issues impacting Vermont and the American people, not worrying. You know, you'll learn about it. If I run for reelection, trust me, you'll be one of the first to know.
Let's turn to Tom, who's calling in Weybridge. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks very much. I am remembering Senator William Proxmire, who back in the 60s and 70s very effectively got lots of attention by campaigning with almost no money at all. You know, he would get lots of free media coverage eating his bologna sandwich in someone's spare bedroom or in a, you know, a budget motel. And it sort of occurs to me that for all the really, really monumental work Bernie has done these last few years, if some of that energy might turn to a sort of boot camp system throughout the country where, regardless of whether it's independents or Democrats, we start to really walk the walk instead of leading only with legislation that says we should take money out of politics. I certainly agree with that. But can we just walk the walk and take the money out of politics and set a great example? And would not our message mean more if it comes to people in this new way? I'll just wait for the response.
Well, Tom, you know, you make an interesting point. And years ago, Senator George Aiken, and some of the older listeners will remember Aiken. Bob, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but there were some years, I think he ran for office and he spent something like $54, right, on postage stamps or something. And, you know, ideally that would be walking the walk. The problem is that that is possible, that could be done, but the moment you announced that that was your plan, there would be billionaires out there, right-wing extremists, would say, okay, let's start flooding the airways. Let's start lying. He can't respond. The candidate can't, you know, put together a grassroots get-out-the-vote effort. So ideally, what you're saying is enticing. It's interesting. But whether or not Proxmire or anybody else could do it in this day and age remains to be seen. But I thought where you were going when you talked about a boot camp, which is where I had something I am looking at, is what we want to do in VPIRG in the state of Vermont does a fantastic job at this. They got a lot of young people, motivated young people, concerned, whether it's about campaign finance reform, which has been one of their issues, or whether it's climate change, and get people out knocking on doors. I mean, what I believe is, I'm not a great fan, although I certainly have done it, of putting 30-second TV ads on the air. Sometimes you have to do it. But what is much more interesting to me, and I think fundamentally much more important long-term, is developing a strong grassroots movement where people are out knocking on doors. They're talking to their neighbors about the important issues facing the country. And I think that is something that I and other people probably this summer will be working on, you know, just to bring young people and working people into the political process.
Senator Sanders, we've gotten a number of emails that noted that for much of your political career, you've railed against the so-called 1%, those folks in the top income category in this country. And it was disclosed this week that your salary for 2016 will exceed $1 million, putting you in the 1%. And what some of our listeners want to know is, how will this affect the issues that you speak out on?
Okay, that's a good question. It's not my salary, Bob. As you know, I get paid what every other member of the United States Senate gets, and I think I'm way in the low end of that in terms of wealth. As you know, I wrote a book. It was called Our Revolution, and I'm happy to tell you that that book has sold, I believe, some 300,000 copies here in the United States. It was on the New York Times bestseller list for a number of weeks. It is being republished in, I believe, Germany, China, Korea, UK, and I think a few other countries. So it's selling. And when you write a book and it sells, you make money. And I have. I would say, interestingly enough, this book is not a romance novel. If people read the book, what they will find, it is precisely what I've been talking about throughout my political life and what I'm talking about in the book. And that is a very concrete approach as to how we transform American society, how, in fact, we ask the wealthiest people in this country to begin paying their fair share of taxes, how we deal with climate change by taking on the fossil fuel industry, how we provide health care to all as a right, et cetera, et cetera. So the book, in fact, is a concrete agenda about how we end the movement toward oligarchy in this country and create a government which works for all the people. So to answer the question, I would say that the book itself, what it stands for, is what I believe in, and that is democracy. That means taking on the big money interest in creating, you know, a society that works for everybody and not just the people on top. So no, I don't think the fact that this book did well and I made some money is going to change my politics. No, I don't think that's going to happen.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, Senator Bernie Sanders. Senator, earlier in the program, you were talking about the election in England. And as you mentioned, you were over there in the last couple of weeks. We got this email from Matt who says last night's Labour upset in the UK was spearheaded by over 70% turnout from the 18 to 24 demographic. Do you believe such a spike in turnout is possible here for the midterm elections?
Absolutely. And that is what I am working on right now. In general, they were like, I don't know what their final tally was in terms of their voter turnout. I think it was 67-70% yesterday. In our election, we had 59-60%, which is high for the United States. But midterm, you'll recall this, midterm in 2014, we had 37% of the American people voting, 63% not voting in Vermont. We had the lowest voter turnout since World War II, when many Americans were abroad fighting in the war. And if the turnout was low for the general population, it was extraordinarily low for young people and lower-income people. And what I have said many times, and what I deeply believe, is if we had a turnout here equivalent to what goes on in the UK or France or other countries, if you had 70, 75% of the people voting in some of those countries, this Congress would look very, very different. What Republicans like is low voter turnouts, and they're working very hard, as you know, on voter suppression, trying to make it harder in Republican states for people of color, lower-income people, older people to vote under the guise that they're supposedly fighting voter fraud, which virtually does not exist. And by the way, I'm really proud that in Vermont we have moved exactly the opposite direction, trying to encourage people, open up the process, and that's a good thing. So to answer your question, yeah, we have got to make a major effort. I think young people, and I think our campaign for president has something to do with that, now understand the stakes that are in front of them, whether they're going to have decent-paying jobs, whether we're going to transform our energy system to protect us from climate change, whether we make public colleges and universities tuition-free, et cetera, et cetera. Young people right now in this country today stand the real likelihood of, for the first time in the modern history of America, having a lower standard of living than their parents. And that's crazy, despite all the increase in technology and worker productivity. So to answer the question, yeah, I'm going to do everything I can, and I think it's terribly important to get people involved in the political process to raise that voter turnout, especially true among younger people.
Let's talk to Ethan, who's calling from Norwich. Hi, Ethan. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me. I got a question for Bernie. The Financial Choice Act was just passed by Jeb Hensarli and the House of Republicans to repeal Dodd-Frank. And I was curious what Bernie's plans are to deal with this when it hits the Senate.
Whether it's Trump, whether the Republicans in the House on the Financial Services Committee or wherever, these are people who, as I mentioned earlier, are working very, very hard to fulfill the Koch brothers' agenda, which is to deregulate virtually all corporate activity, repeal virtually every major piece of legislation over the last 70 or 80 years designed to protect the working people of this country. So here you have, in Wall Street, a handful of financial institutions that have trillions of dollars collectively in assets. You have a group of folks who, in 2008, through the subprime mortgage crisis, through their recklessness and their greed and their illegal behavior, brought this country to its economic knees and created the worst economic decline since the Great Depression in America and through many parts of the world. These guys, in many cases, are crooks. And they get away with murder. They have paid, in every case, every major financial institution, Goldman Sachs, all the rest, have paid billions and billions of dollars in fines to the federal government for illegal activity. And yet now what the Republicans are saying is, oh, the modest efforts of Dodd-Frank to control them so that maybe we don't have this kind of outrageous irresponsibility of where these guys are peddling financial products that are totally worthless. Oh, we got to repeal that. Wall Street wants it repealed. They want to go back to the old ways. So that's what you're seeing. I mean, that's what you're seeing in terms of financial regulation. They want to repeal Dodd-Frank. And, what's particularly upsetting about this, Bob, is not just the nature of this legislation. You have Donald Trump having run for president of the United States and saying to his supporters out there, I'm a different type of Republican, says Trump. I'm going to take on Wall Street, or ads. We had these Wall Street guys on his ads. He's going to take them on. And yet he has appointed his major financial economic advisor, the guy named Cohn, C-O-H-N, who is directly former president of Goldman Sachs. He has more billionaires in his cabinet than any president in the history of this country. A lot of folks from Wall Street. So the hypocrisy of telling the American people during your campaign you're going to stand with working families, you're going to take on Wall Street, take on the establishment, then appoint these guys as soon as you're elected is literally beyond belief. But, to answer the question, obviously we're going to fight that as hard as we can. Wall Street has done irreparable damage to the people of this country, and they cannot be allowed to go back to their old ways.
Senator, let's talk about financial disclosure as well. During your presidential campaign, you talked about the need to have financial disclosure and transparency. You strongly criticized then Republican candidate Donald Trump for not releasing his tax returns. You were very critical of Hillary Clinton for accepting hundreds of thousands of dollars in speaking fees from Wall Street firms without releasing the text of those speeches. And yet your campaign sought and was granted three separate 45-day extensions for financial disclosure with the Federal Election Commission. And then you ended your campaign, and as a result, you were no longer required to submit this information. And the Center for Public Integrity wrote that you expertly exploited a system that allowed you to delay releasing this information.
Bob,
what do you say to that?
But what I say is that we release our income taxes. You just, I think, mentioned the financial disclosure information that we submit every single year. The idea of having to do something when I was no longer a serious candidate, when the election was over, did not make a whole lot of sense to me. But I think in terms of financial disclosure, it's something that I believe in. I do it every single year, period.
Well, this was disclosure by the campaign, Senator.
Yeah, this was after I was no longer a, the campaign was all in, for all intents, over. We fulfill all of the legal obligations, and that information is public.
And did your campaign not seek that delay, those three 45-day delays?
I honestly don't know that. You know, we had a campaign and a whole lot of money and people working on those things. I honestly don't know the answer to that.
I mean, some people might wonder if it's fair to criticize.
What are they wondering about?
Well, is it fair to criticize other candidates for lack of transparency?
I got to tell you this, too. Maybe I'm the only person in Vermont, but occasionally Jane and I ask for extensions when we pay our taxes. It's legal. It happens. You know, so I don't know. Was it some kind of great effort to avoid some kind of disclosure? The answer is no. There are reasons sometimes why. You know, we had a long, whole lot of people working on the campaign. And I'm not on top of everything, but if they, you know, extensions do happen. People do request extensions. Maybe you have asked for an extension also on your IRS returns. I don't know.
Got just a little bit of time left. We got this email from Susan who wants to know what the president means by a combination of private and public money for the airline industry and a transportation infrastructure package.
This is what he means. I have long believed, and the American Society of Civil Engineers will back me up in spades, that our infrastructure is crumbling and that we need to invest a very significant amount of money to rebuild our roads, bridges, water systems, levees, dams, schools, affordable housing, etc., etc. Trump had, during his campaign, said, I, Donald Trump, think we should invest $1 trillion. And people said, wow, that's pretty good. That's similar to what Bernie Sanders said. But it turns out that the plan that he released the other day is a total fraud. And what it is about is privatizing our infrastructure. It's saying we will give tax breaks to Wall Street and corporate America if they are prepared to invest in rebuilding roads so that the folks in Vermont around this country, if their roads are repaired, will have to pay tolls. If there is a parking meter in a city, that will be given over to a private company who can then determine how much you have to pay. So what he is talking about is privatizing our infrastructure, what the people own, selling it off to the private sector. In return, the private sector will invest in rebuilding the infrastructure but make a whole lot of money by increased tolls and fees.
Do you think there's any chance this plan could be supported in the Senate?
His plan, absolutely not. But I think there are Republican conservatives. This is especially bad, Bob, for rural areas. And the Republican chairman of the committee that I happen to be on, Environment and Public Energy, Environment and Public Works, who comes from Wyoming, knows this would be a disaster for his state, as well as for Vermont. So there are a lot of Republicans who understand this plan is absurd. What we have got to do at a time of low interest loans, instead of giving $3 trillion in tax breaks to the top 1%, invest $1 trillion, create 13 million jobs, rebuilding our infrastructure. So that's what I will be fighting for.
That's all the time we have for our program today. Senator Bernie Sanders, many thanks for taking the time to be on Vermont Edition, and let's do it again in the not too distant future.
Well, thank you very much. Take care.